So guys, welcome back to Accelerated Investor. Hey, I'm your host, Josh Cantwell. And today we're going to talk about analyzing markets. I have a guest on the show today. His name is Rama Krishnu. And Rama is an equity partner in 750 plus units of multifamily assets in Florida, Maryland, and North Carolina. He's both a general partner and limited partner. And with more than 15 years of experience as an IT professional, Rama has prided himself on becoming an expert at picking and analyzing markets. His website is ushacapital.com. And today in this interview, you're going to hear about number one, why Rama specifically picks emerging markets and four or five of the criteria that he uses to select emerging markets. Number two, you're going to hear a great discussion about why he invests in properties that were built after the 1980s and why that's such an easier management play. Number three, you're going to hear about us talking about our change in underwriting and the difference in underwriting from a year ago to the way that we underwrite deals today. Number four, you're going to learn the specific order of how to select a general partner. If you're a limited partner looking to invest with a general, you're going to pick number one, operator first, market second, property third, in that order. And we're going to talk about why in that order. And finally, number five, you're going to learn seven criteria that and questions that a limited partner should ask a general partner before they invest. So today you're going to learn about not only investing as a limited partner, questions you should be ready to answer as a general partner, but also specifically about analyzing emerging markets. And so here we go with the next episode of Accelerated Investor with Rama Krishna. Here we go. So, hey, Rama, listen, welcome to the show. Welcome to Accelerated Investor. I'm excited to talk to you today about your journey at multifamily and specifically about analyzing markets. So thanks for carving out a few minutes for us today.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Josh. I really appreciate for the introduction and also inviting to your podcast. Yeah.
Thank you. Got it. So Rama, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what you're up to today as we introduce you to our audience. Tell us a little bit about your investment company. Tell us a little bit about what your kind of passion projects are, what you're working on today.
Sure. So my investment company name is Usha Investment Group, LLC. We're out of Greensboro, North Carolina. So we focus on growing market, emerging markets like Raleigh, Charlotte, and Greensboro, Greenville, South Carolina markets. So mainly we are focusing on value-add deals in these markets, built like after 1980, 80 plus units, 82, you know, more than that one. So mainly we are focusing on value-add, light value-add deals.
Got it. I love it. And how are you looking at the market today? We're going to dig deeper into analyzing markets, but real high level, when you look at the market today compared to a year ago or 2 years ago, like what's your take on it? What do you think about today's market? And what are some of the kind of new challenges or the new things that are important to you when you're looking at deals?
So compared to last year, deal flow is a bit slow this year. So it's picking up right now, but deal flow is very, very slow in last one or two quarters. And challenging points are like, you know, debt markets completely shifted from last year, first quarter of last year to second quarter last year and going forward. So that is really impacting overall, you know, deals, you know. So earlier, like we used to underwrite deals with, you know, bridge loans, you know, with 75 or 70 LTVs. Bridge loans are completely out of, you know, out of scope because of high interest rates, so more than 8%. So we are mainly focusing on agency debts and also, you know, low LTVs, like around, you know, 60 LTVs, around 60 LTVs, I can say. So, and also higher interest rates, like last year, it was like fours, you know, around 3.5 fours for agency debts. Now it's almost, you know, mid fives, you know, depending on deal size, you know, if small deals, even it's touching around almost 6%. Definitely that higher interest rates impacting overall returns, you know, cash flow also. So we are very conservatively underwriting deals and, you know, carefully analyzing deals. Yeah.
Got it. So that's kind of the main message that we want to talk about today. Is analyzing markets. You know, you own properties in Florida, Maryland, North Carolina. You're based out of Greensboro. You have an IT background. A lot of the guys that I know that have IT backgrounds are very analytical. They're very good at analyzing deals and analyzing markets. And so as this has changed, again, talk about high level today. You mentioned a few things, like obviously in your underwriting and analyzing deals, analyzing markets. you know, you're not looking at bridge loans anymore because the interest rates are too high. You're looking more at agency and obviously the higher interest rates, even with agency debt. So how have those things affected your underwriting? Meaning, are you focused on a different asset class? Are you focused on different areas? What, how has that impacted your, the markets that you're selecting and the deals that you're looking at?
So that's a great question. So definitely high interest rates and the loyalty is definitely overall returns. I'm hyper focusing on three markets like, you know, Raleigh, MSA, Charlotte MSA, and Greensboro MSA. Earlier, like I said, right, even more number of markets, but I'm hyper-focusing on a few markets. And also from property point of view, also earlier I used to, we used to look for deals like, you know, before 1978, built. Now we are highly focusing on properties built after 1980s, you know, C+2, you know, B-class properties and even A-minus. Those properties, you know, because of different, you know, if you go with, you know, properties built before 1978, we can expect a lot of, you know, deferred maintenance, like plumbing side or roofing side or, you know, electricals, those kind of stuff, you know, a lot of, you know, we can expect a lot of unknown stuff if you go with older properties, you know, that is the reason we are choosing only 1980 after 1980 built. And also, management point of view, also we are looking only 80 plus units, you know. Below 80 plus units is very challenging to manage, you know, with, you know, part-time management, part-time leasing agent or part-time, you know, maintenance guy, you know. So sometimes we need to pay like, you know, we need to hire full-time instead of part-time. We need to go with full-time. That will increase our overall expenses, you know. Overall expenses point of view, it's completely changed, you know. We used to underwrite like 2% or 3%, but in reality, it's like expenses are more than that, you know, because of inflation. Even salaries or labor costs also increase a lot, you know, along with the material cost.
And so you mentioned a few times, you know, before COVID, pre-1978, now you're looking more at assets that were built after the 1980s and the difference in the plumbing, the electrical. Was there something specific that happened in the late 70s or 80s? Was there like a law change to the code? Or what? Why the difference between pre-1980s and after 1980s? Is it just that it's newer asset with less maintenance, or was there something specific that happened at that time?
Mainly like with old assets, normally with, you know, we underwrite with this, like, you know, standard underwriting with like maintenance 350 per unit, or, you know, turnover 300 per unit, something like that. But in reality, it will cost more than that, you know, even turnovers also, you know. And also we'll expect a lot of plumbing issues with, you know, older properties, a lot of stuff we are not aware of, that, you know, small stuff. It will cost like a lot of, you know, a lot of overall expenses side. Yeah, that is the main reason, you know.
Are you ready to automate and explode your real estate investing? We're searching for extremely motivated individuals who are sick and tired of wasting time and want to finally see real results from their real estate investing business. We're searching for investors looking to get to the next level and become a bigger, better version of themselves while being a more successful real estate investing entrepreneur. Apply for mentoring and coaching at joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast. That's joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast.
And so it sounds like you've really changed from 2 years ago, where you could go more with bridge debt, you know, you go more with these assets in these growth markets, maybe more of a value add play. And because now the bridge loans are no longer really a viable option, it's really changed your entire approach, where you're looking now at newer assets, 1980s, 1990s, lighter value adds, and going with more agency debt. So it sounds like a pretty significant shift, no?
Not completely significant, but still we are playing with value add deals, but not deeper value adds. So with, you know, it's still like 1990s built or like almost 40 years old. Still, we need to play with that value add component. So the, from a plumbing point of view, like which are built after 1980s, like, you know, copper and PVC, you know, those kind of stuff, and also electrical wiring also, you know, copper side. So whereas like before that one, it's like, you know, aluminum and, you know, cast iron and those kind of stuff. So with that, you know, expenses will be a bit higher. So with the newer ones, expenses will be a little bit lesser, you know?
Got it. Love it. So let's talk about selecting markets. You know, you have an IT background, analytical background. You're based out of Greensboro, but you have assets in Florida, North Carolina. You're both a limited partner and general partner. So let's just talk high level. When you think about analyzing markets, what does that mean to you? And what's the first thing that you do? Do you analyze the market first or a deal first? Tell us about that.
So always market. Market is number one. I will look at it. First, I will say as a GP, I will select markets first. So mainly like, you know, emerging markets where population is growing, where jobs are going, coming to those markets. And also a few other factors also I will consider, like landlord friendly and, you know, those kind of stuff, you know, and also emerging markets, right? So I will select markets first, then property or, you know, sub-market, those factors like medium average household income and also, you know, rent bumps, that properties under market rents, you know, those kind of stuff.
There's so many markets, right? Like there's like 19,000 major cities in this country. The bellwether gateway markets like a Chicago or like an LA or like a New York or like a Houston. And then there's a bazillion other markets like a Greensboro, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Indianapolis. I mean, you name it, Louisville, Kentucky. And then there's the submarkets underneath those and often a major city. Take Cincinnati, for example, just pull that one out. There's at least 13 submarkets in Cincinnati. Greensboro probably has 8 to 12 submarkets just in Greensboro. Let's talk high-level market first, the bigger city, the bigger market. Are you looking at, when you look at population growth, job growth, household income, rent growth, are you looking at a market just from what you hear in the popular news? There's got to be at least 50 to 100 markets just to look at from a very high level, right? Like if I'm new and I live in LA or I live in Chicago, or I live in New York, New Jersey, and they're very expensive markets. And I know I want to move to the South, the Southeast, the Midwest. What's the very first thing you would do to even bother picking like 10 markets, 20 markets to start to select and review? Because there's so many you could possibly choose from.
So yeah, for me, like, you know, there are multiple ways we can approach this one. So attending conferences is one way, and also, you know, going through some kind of education programs, like Neil Bava has some, you know, program around like selecting cities, those kind of stuff. And also there are other way like census.gov. We can get all this data using census.gov, like population growth, job growth, diversification of jobs, and also, you know, labor market. All this stuff we'll get from, you know, census.gov. And also, so I did all this kind of research using like for multiple markets, like let's take Southeast markets like Raleigh, Charlotte, Greensboro, Greenville, Atlanta, Florida, Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando, Nashville, Texas. So for all these markets, I did all this kind of research, gathered all the information from census.gov. What is the population 10 years back and now? And also, you know, job markets, unemployment rate compared to 10 years back to versus now, and also job diversifications, all those kind of data I gathered from that and analyzed, and also subscribe to various local newsletters in these markets, and, you know, where jobs are, you will get all kind of where jobs are coming, those kind of information using that. So using that, I analyzed multiple markets until I selected multiple markets, but I want to hyper focus on few markets so that I will get, you know, I will build better relationship with property management companies, or, you know, to get better understanding of sub markets, like which sub markets are really great, you know, where which sub markets are emerging, where, you know, so, and also medium household income is good, crime rate is low, you know, school ratings are good, those kind of stuff I will pick.
I got it. I love it. Yeah. So census.gov is a huge place to get that data. There's other data sources. We actually talk about this during the live events that we teach. There's 6 or 8 different places and reports that we use. And census.gov is definitely one of them. PricewaterhouseCoopers has a great report that they put out every year. You know, CoStar has amazing reports about markets and submarkets. And as Rema mentioned, you're looking at really the 5-year, 10-year growth. And that's what's really important to determine a market, because all you can do is really look in the past. Like all those reports are really looking to the past data And then when you look at the future data, then it becomes more granular about what's actually happening in the market, talking to property management companies, what do they think the emerging submarkets are, what's going in for businesses, what's going in for retail, is there new office buildings being built, new manufacturing plants. That often will not be available at census.gov or some of the reports that look at the past. Then you have to look at a specific market or submarket. You have to get a little bit more granular. Rama mentioned talking specifically to property management companies. And there's some other reports that you can get to look at future growth, future projections. That's really, really important. And the main things that he's mentioned, population growth, job growth, median household growth, rent growth, those are the types of things, job diversification that we look at to make sure that a market is growing. Rama, when you look at your markets, everybody has a different take on this, so I'm always curious to hear everybody's opinions. There's no right or wrong answer, of course, but how much more do you believe in investing in your backyard versus investing in another market that might be a plane ride away? And I asked that question because when COVID hit, a lot of people realized that it's much tougher to manage a property that's a plane ride away. Now, obviously, the world has unthawed. Things are a lot easier. COVID's not so prevalent. But how much do you believe in investing in your backyard, especially when you're starting out? Or do you subscribe to the idea that, hey, it doesn't matter where you live, you can invest anywhere as long as you go make those relationships and understand the marketplace? What are your thoughts on that?
So, yeah, before that, I would like to add a few other points for a previous question. Like, I will also look like different reports, like IRR reports and Marcus Millichap reports, CBRE reports, and, you know, different like Deloitte or some other reports also. Mm-hmm. For this question, like you mentioned, there is no right or wrong answer, right? So for me, luckily, I'm in great markets. So like Raleigh, Charlotte, Greensboro, and South Carolina, these markets like emerging markets, great markets. So it's an advantage for me. So I'm looking for local markets, but someone living in California or New York, so they can look outside of their, you know, states. You know, there are a lot of investors in this multifamily space. They invest in outside of their, you know, own markets. If I'm in different markets, maybe I will also look, you know, good emerging markets, like, you know, like markets you mentioned, you know, Southeast markets, Texas or Florida or stable markets like Indianapolis or, you know, Ohio, those markets. So it is, there is no right or wrong answers. But for me, luckily, I'm in good markets. It's a boots on the ground market. So
yeah. So you get the best of both worlds, right? You get an emerging market, a growth market, and also happens to be around the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. That's fantastic stuff. I love it. So when you look at being a limited partner, you're a limited partner in deals, but you're also a general partner in deals. If you're a limited partner, I guess speak to the limited partners of the world out there right now. What are some things that they should be asking the general partner, or what kind of underwriting should they be doing? It almost baffles me sometimes how little research limited partners do. There's a lot of limited partners that do a tremendous amount of research, obviously, and everyone has a different comfort level. Some people get comfortable with the operator and they're like, yeah, I like the operator. So they don't do a whole lot of underwriting on the deal. But obviously, things have been different. The market's changed. Underwriting has changed. Debt's changed. Even preferred returns that general partners can pay to limited partners has changed. So what kind of advice or updates do you have for limited partners and the best way for them to invest and really de-risk their investments?
So like mentioned, you already covered a few points, like operator is number one point and also market is number two. Then the third one is like deal. So from deal point of view, I would look, you know, their capital reserves. That is one important for me. And also their expenses, like insurance expenses or real estate taxes, I will look. So some specific markets, these are very, very expensive, like, you know, Texas or Florida markets. So rent growth projections, how they are, you know, projecting rents like first year, second year, or, you know, and what is their value add play and how much rent bump they're increasing, you know, is that realistic rent bump? And what is their exit cap rate? So is that realistic, you know, compared to where current interest rates? And what kind of loans they are going with? And what is their LTVs? How much they are leveraging? So are they leveraging very high or low? You know, those are the factors I would look, you know.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a great look quick list. So if you missed that part, or you're a limited partner, or even if you're a general partner looking to bring in limited partners, the little list that Rama just mentioned, go back, rewind the podcast, listen to that again, and make sure you catch that, because he did a really good job. That 30 seconds I thought was big. Make sure you write that stuff down, re-listen to that again. Rama, I'm curious, now that you're having success in this multifamily space, both as a limited partner and our general partner, you started out as an immigrant from India, an IT professional. How did in multifamily begin for you? How did you jump into it? Where did the education come from and your initial step into multifamily? How did you find out about it? And what was your first experience like?
So I started with single families around 2014. So I did single families townhome stuff. So I was also full-time that time. It's doing full-time and also managing the single families scattered across multiple locations is a bit challenging. So then I thought, like, you know, this is not going well, so I need to do some other options. That's how I came about multifamily. Somehow I got that commercial real estate book by Peter Harris. I read that book, and also I really like that concept of, you know, scaling and, you know, managing properties using third-party property management. So then I explored a little bit more through, you know, listening podcasts like Michael Blanc's podcast and other podcasts, and I started and went to some mentorship or mastermind groups, and also attended various virtual conferences like that. And also attended various multiple meetups and, you know, a lot of listening podcasts and also networking with other, you know, new operators or new GPs, and also start underwriting deals and, you know, start analyzing markets and read various reports, like, you know, CBRE, Marcus Millichap IRR reports. That's how I kept, you know. And also I read books like, you know, David Lindau's books, you know, those kind of stuff. That's how I started.
How scary was it then on your first multifamily investment?
It's not scary because it took some time. So I'm a bit comfortable by doing all this stuff, right? So attending conferences and, you know, networking and also. So by that time, I started my own podcast so that I'm a bit comfortable. So only thing is, you know, finding right team, that is the key. Yeah.
Got it. So you really got the education first. I mean, you mentioned masterminds, virtual events, podcasts, reading books. You know, four, five, six things you mentioned to really give yourself education about the marketplace first. You started out with single families, realized that that was not going to get you where you wanted to go. So after doing all of that, right, and going that, I would say, is a relatively traditional path of getting the education first, understanding that multifamily, the larger assets are going to create more freedom, more stabilized assets, more doors under one roof. What are some of the things that you've learned? What kind of advice would you give to our audience? What kind of advice would you give your younger self about your journey? What's worked well? What would you change?
So definitely, you know, from starting on, so I will take extreme ownership for all my actions. So I'd like to take complete ownership for my, you know, my growth or my investments, everything, my role. That is what I want to do, you know. Educate yourself. Yeah, definitely education is top priority. And finding right team and finding right group is important. Right community is very, very key to success. So that will speed up the process. Now, if you select right team, you'll be in right track. You'll find the track very easily or very fast.
Yeah, I love it. Well, his company is ushacapital.com. USHA capital.com. You can visit his website there to learn more about Usha Investment Group. Rama is, again, an equity partner in 750 plus units, Florida, Maryland, and North Carolina, and has successfully made this pivot from his regular day job W-2 into multifamily. Obviously, an expert at analyzing markets. So Rama, is there any place else that our audience can engage with you and learn more about you?
So they can reach me at info@ushacapital.com. And also I do organize virtual conferences. It's multifamilyap360.com. So yeah, that's how they can reach out to me.
Awesome. I appreciate you jumping on the show today and sharing some of your insights on analyzing markets. Rama, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Josh. Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Well, guys, there you have it. Listen, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Rama. Go back and listen again to those checklists that he gave for selecting operators, markets, properties, and also different questions that limited partners should be asking GPs. One of the things that I think Rama has prided himself on, you know, being newer investor to real estate over the last 9 years, and then specifically multifamily over the past 4 or 5 years, if you know how to analyze an operator, analyze a market, and then analyze a property, you de-risk your investments. That is critical. One of the things that we teach during our live events at foreverpassiveincome.com is exactly that. We spend a whole 2 hours specifically on analyzing operators, analyzing markets, and analyzing properties using what we call the matrix. It's our deal analyzing software. So if you want to get access to that software and a ticket to our upcoming live events, we do them virtually once a quarter, go to foreverpassiveincome.com and grab your ticket now. And as always, don't forget, like, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so we can continue to push this out and this message out to as many people as possible and help them become a better accelerated investor. We'll see you next time. Take care.
You were just listening to the Accelerated Investor Podcast with Josh Cantwell. If you enjoyed this episode and learned something new, help us build the AI community by leaving a review and 5-star rating on our iTunes podcast channel. Also, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss another episode. To see passive investing opportunities, visit freelandventures.com/passive. To start your journey toward the lifestyle you've always dreamed of with multifamily apartments, apply for one-on-one coaching with Josh at www.joshcantwellcoaching.com.